Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Danny Tierce Johnson.
Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Danny Tierce Johnson. I'm a Gomeroi boy from Moree, New South Wales. Shout out to all the mob on the Mihai. Love and miss you dearly. And just want to give a special shout out to Bowie Spearham. Cuzzy's out there fighting the good fight against Santos. There's a big meeting out on country at the moment. And we just want to pay our respects to you mob out there. Thank you for what you're doing. We'd just like to acknowledge the sovereignty of First Nations people across this country today. From our lands, from where we're broadcasting from, to wherever you are listening. We pay our respects to your traditional owners, your elders past and present. Now, big news over the night, just before we get into the show, there's been big news with the retirement of Ash Barty. Just an incredible woman, at 25 years of age, being number one in the world and retiring. So I've had enough. I've had my fun. I've reached the top of the mountain. And she's got a press conference today to tell us what's next. But we've just got a little package here that we'll play, and we'll just pay a little bit of homage to Ash Barty.
Good evening. Tennis champion Ash Barty has stunned the sporting world by quitting the game.
Australian tennis superstar Ash Barty has shocked the world by announcing she's retiring from the sport aged just 25.
Big news out of the world of tennis, where Ash Barty, the number one women's singles player in the world, has retired at the age of 25.
I'm here to talk to you about it with my team, my loved ones, that I'll be retiring from tennis.
Beautifully done from Barty.
So happy, and I'm so ready, and I just know at the moment in my heart for me as a person, this is right.
How clever is that from Barty?
And I'm so grateful to everything that tennis has given me. It's given me all of my dreams plus more. But I know that the time is right now for me to step away and chase other dreams and to put the rackets down.
Ash Barty, thank you, Ash Barty. Thank you for all that you do and have done and accomplished. It's been so inspiring, not for just for our young sisters, but also our young brothers out there. And what a way to go out, number one on top, eh? So thank you, Ash. We can't wait for the press conference. And this little black duck will be trying to chase her for an interview. So hopefully, now that she's retired, we can get her. Okie dokie, moving on to our show today. On Let's Talk today, we're talking about the big C, cancer. It's the leading cause of death for our people, and while the mortality rate for non-Indigenous Australians has decreased by 12%, the mortality rate for our mob, shockingly, has increased by 12%. That's a 24% disparity between us mob and them mob. But it's not all doom and gloom, with our young scientists turning to bush medicine to find cures for cancer and other diseases such as Parkinson. Our guest today is Eden Little, and she's Australia's first Indigenous natural product and medicinal chemist. She has a Bachelor of Masters in specialising in traditional medicine. At just 24, she started a doctorate of philosophy. I couldn't tie my shoelaces at 24, sis. researching the medicinal and anti-cancer properties of the Aboriginal bush medicine Gumby Gumby. This is fascinating. Eden Little, welcome to the show. First of all, sis, can you tell us your mob, your country, and a bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that great introduction. I'm a Gomeroi woman. My family is the Knoxes from Bogabilla.
Hey, shout out the Knoxes.
Yeah.
They are probably the most amazing musical family in Australia, or one of.
Yes, unfortunately, I didn't get the musical talent, but that's all right. So Mum actually grew up in Darwin, though.
Yep.
And they moved down after Cyclone Tracy and moved to Meanjin. So I was born and raised in Meanjin, and know the area very well. So I lived off country, but feel very connected to country.
Yeah, a lot of Gomeroi mob up here. It's like a suburb of Moree, I call it, sometimes Brisbane. There's so many mob up here, but it's also Darwin. I lived up there for 5 years, and it's just an extraordinary part of the world.
Yeah.
The terrain up there, the environment and the mob, it's a special part of the world, Darwin.
Yeah, it's got a special place in Mum's heart. She's always saying, I just want to run back to Darwin. Okay. One day, Mum, just let me finish my degree.
Well, you've got a little bit to go, but before we get into all your work, your amazing work, groundbreaking work, tell me a bit about your love for science. I was telling you before, I'm a massive science fan. I'm a bit of a nerd myself, ever since the Back to the Future movies and Quantum Leap, the 90s hit sitcom. Mm-hmm. Old people in their 40s, you know what I'm talking about. But what drew you to the world of science, sis? What is it?
Yeah. So what's really interesting about, like, my love for science is I didn't know it was science, right? Like, it really stemmed from being connected to country, and it wasn't something that I ever defined. Like, I know one of the strongest childhood memories I have, I think, in my schooling came from, I think I must have been 9, and we went to a rainforest for a field trip. Mm. I have no idea why, not sure the purpose of it, but that one trip was so, like, instrumental to me. Being out in nature, listening to the sounds, getting to walk around, looking at the creeks, like, that was one of the highlights of my primary school years, which just seems, you know, quite bizarre to put into words what that was, right? But it was that connection that started where I was going. So it was never chemistry. It never began with chemistry. It was more, when I went to uni, I started with a love for environmental sustainability, and mm-hmm. I wanted to work in, you know, animal conservation and, you know, plant conservation. But it's just over time it develops, right? Like, you pick up one interest and then you pick up another hobby, and then next thing you know, like, you just, you know, your interest is so wide.
Yep.
In addition to that, like, you know, that connection, Mum has this gorgeous, gorgeous garden at home of just native plants. And I don't know why she kind of did that, but she just didn't like any of the introduced species.
Yeah,
she
a lot of mob are like that. A lot of mob, yeah. I know, have, yeah, just native plants in their yard.
Yeah, and they love that garden. And I grew up with Mum loving this garden. And now when you look at the houses, you know, in Mianjin, and, you know, all the trees are cut down, you can just see the one big tree, and you can see and hear the birds, and it's Mum's tree. And, you know, she's had to fight council, like, do not cut down my tree. And I think that
just, go, Mama.
Yeah, that love of nature and that appreciation and respect really started my love for science. It was actually being out and connecting with it, and that was where my love of science came from. It was never from, you know, specifically, like, you know, maybe a show or a book or anything like that. It was that experience and that feeling I got. And so I kind of felt like it was a bit of a hack that if I worked in this area, I could do what I loved every day.
Yeah, so. That's a great yarn. It's a great way to begin. I like that you remove the science aspect, and it's just about culture and growing up. I can remember when I was a little fella, about 4 or 5, and I used to stare at leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Because leaves have got freaky patterns.
Yeah.
And so, and then when you get older, you see the shapes in the leaves, almost the shape of country.
Yep.
Of the terrain. And we actually had a brother in the other day. I got him on the show in a few weeks' time on a Friday. He's doing lots of art around leaves and cultural, but that's another show, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just that, you know, I just remember staring at leaves, and just that's where my love for science
grew, always,
I guess, yeah.
It's always a unique thing, but it always, like, snowballs into something bigger, and, you know, that love expands, and, you know, you can find that sometimes, you know, you can get into science and it doesn't have to be so boring and I mean, sometimes it is, let's be honest. But
yeah, I think it's just the Western school system too, because they make science a bit clinical and, like, dry.
Yes. No.
How
exactly.
do I say it? Like,
No. That's the perfect way to say it.
And get out the Bunsen burner and put on your white coat. And
no, I think that's the one thing I've clashed with, I guess, is that clinicalness, and it doesn't connect. It takes the interconnectedness away, and it takes the context away from the science sometimes. And, you know, as a mob, that just doesn't make sense. So. Yeah.
Now, well, that leads on to our next question, you know. You originally went to university as you wanted to care for country and work in wildlife conservation. Mm-hmm. However, a semester before graduating from your Bachelor of Science, you found a love of natural product chemistry. Mm-hmm. So you went into it in one way, and then you've, like a lot of mob do, you've followed different little paths to get where you are now. Can you tell us about that journey, and I guess having that flexibility to shift studies and, I guess, focus?
Yeah, okay. So when I did my bachelor's, I did a triple major in my bachelor's, which is funny because this is you know, it may sound really impressive, but it was just me being undecided.
It is very impressive when I read it yesterday. You got a triple major.
I didn't plan to go into that. Let me just tell you, there was never these high expectations. But I went in originally for wildlife biology, and that was, you know, the botany, the plants, the nature, the conservation. And then because I did my uni at Gold Coast, I was so connected to the sea that I added marine biology. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, you love nature, you love it all, right? Where does, the land and the sea meet? It's just one big thing. So that seemed like a hand in hand. It was from actually that field trip. We went to Heron Island, and mm-hmm. I worked with a natural product chemist and kind of saw behind the scenes of what this academic did. And we took some sponges and we were able to extract natural products. So natural products is the chemicals that are in it, the mm-hmm. pure chemicals, and it's pure makeup essentially. So it's all natural. But seeing that process, unless you see it, you don't know it's a thing. Like, you don't know it's a field. You don't know it's a possibility to work in. And so that's where I kind of went, oh, chemistry is quite interesting. Like, it doesn't have to be so scary. Like, you know, a lot of it is.
Yeah.
But that part, seeing that actual element of seeing, you know, the makeup of how things are made, it was so holistic, and I think it just made so much sense to my brain. So that's the first little dash of like, oh, this is chemistry and it's cool. I really like this. So I had finished my two majors, and from that I was meant to graduate, and I went, no, I think I need to just stay a little bit longer. So for a year, I just did chemistry courses at uni, which was grueling, let me tell you.
Yeah, although, sounds like it.
Although I did take a couple electives. I did get in trouble from the uni from this. I did too many electives. I took some Aboriginal political histories to break up.
Just take some extra studies on, why not?
Just to get away from the chemistry side, right? It's so clinical.
Yep.
And so being able to do something that was, you know, learning about, you know, our history in this country and seeing people do really tough work in times where it was not accepted, like, not going to lie, I think that was the inspiration I needed to not quit.
Yeah,
that
right.
Point, right? So as I was doing this long, grueling year, and I was a semester off finishing, I was having a really hard time, let me tell you. So I was sick at the time, so I had to push off all my exams to the end of the year. At the same time, my auntie, she had been diagnosed with lung cancer and she was undergoing surgery.
Oh, wow.
And I had taken up to do a summer internship in the uni for 8 weeks to work on a research project. And the research project wasn't originally on Gumby, it was on something different. But with those factors combined, and I did have a little bit of trouble with staying in uni at that point, there was a little bit of issues with, you've done too many courses, you kind of just need to get it out.
So yeah, right.
That was a different issue. But
kicked out for being too smart, that's a first.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. But this mountain of issues, I was really at this breaking point, and I really say that this was like a very important part of, you know, my life so far and my career, is I was angry. Like, I was so upset, you know, seeing what my auntie was going through and just the workload I had on my shoulders. And I wasn't receiving compassion from, you know, the institute I was within.
Yep.
But I really took that, like, anger and pain, and I went, well, I'm doing an internship, I'm doing summer research, I might as well just change the topic, and I might as well just work on Gumby, because that's going to make me feel good that I can give some sort of information to my auntie, to my family, so we can kind of get through this together. And that's kind of how this started way back then. And that was then my purpose to keep going. That was my purpose to keep studying. That was my purpose to get my degrees. And, you know, where I ended up, it was, you know, one of those life or death situations. And I felt useless at that point. I really did. And being able to research the plant that my auntie was using and the medicine she was using and the medicine that recovered her, and she's still here with us today, and she could go to my bachelor's graduation, and that was phenomenal for me. Like, that was my why. And so my connection to what I'm doing now, and very much, you know, the bush medicine and the plant, it hasn't come from any other means but, you know, feeling like that I had the opportunity to do something for my family. I had the opportunity to do something for, you know, my auntie. And a lot of it was for myself too, to keep me going. Cause sometimes I think when you're in these hard spaces or, you know, you're the only Indigenous person in a workplace or whatever, you need to find that why. Yeah. And that was it for me.
Yeah, because, you know, it's great to hear you talk about this and challenges at university, and so many of our mob, young and older, at university. I think it's a beautiful thing. I love studying myself.
Yep.
I was a very late bloomer when it comes to studying because of my lifestyle. But the challenges at university, can you just talk about that a bit more and I guess how you got through it? I just want our mob at uni to be able to hear this because you've obviously achieved quite a lot, and if you just read it on paper, you've looked like you've just breezed through and it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the case, is it?
No.
You had to lean on family. You know, it's quite challenging. It can affect mental health. I've been there, you know. So just before we get on to the Gumby yarn and the cancer yarn, just tell me that journey through uni and how you got through it and how you had to lean on family.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll start even earlier than that. I'll start in primary school even because, you know, it's very much the case when people talk to me about my achievements, they go, oh, wow, like they can only imagine that it's just been easy. And for people who know me, they really know that's not the case. I'm just a fighter. And I think before I kind of get into my story, I just want to say that I think there's a lot of power in being an underdog, or there's like a lot of power in people not believing in you, because when people already kind of look at you as a disappointment, you can just go and mind your own business and just get good stuff done.
Yeah.
So, you know, back in primary school, and I think this is maybe why I kept my head down and I worked hard in school, even though I wasn't the brightest kid, even though, you know, I struggled with testing always. Like, I don't have the brain for that. I can't sit in a classroom. I just struggle. I struggle sitting in one place. And unfortunately, I saw really early on, because, you know, we grew up under the poverty line, mum raised a single mum, you know, it was a big struggle. Like, mum learnt to read and write when I did, so in her 30s. So I don't have, you know, educated parents or family or anything like that who was able to just naturally push me into it. But what I did see from a really young age was how mum was treated for not being educated, and how, you know, my nana was treated by people for not being educated. And very early on, because I loved public speaking, I remember, I think I must have been 11, and I did a presentation.
Can I just say, that's pretty weird.
Loving public speaking.
I hated it. Oh, God.
I think it's just because the aunties.
Start sweating and shaking and my lip would shake. So for you to love public speaking, I just think that's pretty cool.
I think it's the women in my family. We just love talking to people. We just twist it, though. So now I can, like, you know, kind of do that as much as I can for work, right?
Touché, sis, touché.
Right? There was this presentation I did in school, and I remember my teacher pulling me aside and going and saying, you know, I'm so sorry. I really want to put you on this presentation, but I just have to let you know the person I've picked, their parents are in the PNC and they've made a donation for them to be there. And I was 11 at this point. And for me, I kind of went, oh, okay, like, things aren't going to be easy. Things aren't going to be fair. If you don't have the money backing, you don't have, you know, a big name backing you, you're on your own.
And you realise this at 11.
Yeah, yeah, and it caused so many self-esteem issues, I guess, because I thought it was me. Like, I didn't understand quite what that nepotism was until, you know, you really get to uni. So from an early age, big struggle. I saw how, you know, the teachers treated mum. I know how they looked down on her. No money, no support, whatever. Not educated, you know, had difficulties reading, writing, filling in forms, all that kind of stuff. And so when I went to high school then, I just kind of minded my business and I just worked. Like, I did things because I loved to do it. Like, I loved to learn. I didn't love the environment. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell anyone now, if I had to go back to high school, I absolutely would not do it. It was grueling. It was horrible. And I had a really hard experience, lots of bullying in school. And when I was 15 and I was struggling, my guidance counselor said to me, you're better off dropping out. And my mum thought that was ridiculous.
Wow, what advice.
Yeah, right? And my mum thought that was ridiculous, and she knew mum always says, you're so smart. And I go, no, I'm just hardworking. And so for grade 11 and 12, I did homeschooling, And that was a way to get my education but not have that social aspect and not have to deal with the struggles that teenagers really have to deal with. And when it, at that time, it was also kind of when online bullying started. I think that was kind of the peak of that. So was like, it was a grueling time, not going to lie. It was pretty feisty. And so from that point, I had a lot of mental health struggles. And I don't know if this is probably the best way to cope with it, but for me, it was easier to not deal with my problems or beat myself up for it. And so what I did is I just distracted my brain with school.
Yeah, right.
And also, you know, just to be transparent, I kind of always did that through primary school too when you know, there was a bit of domestic violence growing up as
so
well.
So to deal with your trauma, you studied?
I basically locked myself in my room and I was quiet, and I remember having to do homework and tasks and, you know, in an unstable environment. And so sometimes you get really good with coping with chaos and still working. I think that's a testament to mob. Like, I think you'll see the work ethic and the resilience of other mob.
I say that all over the country with our people.
Right?
Yeah.
Is when you learn to work in those unstable conditions, no one can take anything away from you, right? Like, that builds resilience like no other. So, you know, that was pretty unstable growing up. When I got to uni, again, wasn't easy, was not easy at all. And I did fail first year chemistry and first year biology, first semester straight off the bat.
I was going to ask you about that because here you are now, you're, you know, the first indigenous medicinal chemist in Australia, and yet you failed biology and chemistry, and then here you are.
Yep. So uni is a very hard environment. Anyone who does a bachelor's, it's hard. It's difficult. I say now, if I had to go back and do my bachelor's, I think I'd really struggle because I don't have the brain that suits testing. And I had to learn that really late. I'd always get really good results in my writing and lab results or presentations, right? You couldn't put me in a room for 2 hours and expect me to circle bubbles. Like, that was hell. And
I can identify with that.
And so my grades really weren't good. They weren't good at all. My GPA was pretty bad when I finished. And so bad that I wasn't actually able to get into, like, honours. So, you know, with that being said, there's always a way. There's always a way to do things.
Mm.
No one's going to ever blankly say, but if you want it bad enough, you can get it. So I really struggled with undergrad, but what was really good, I found my Murray unit, and I found at the uni other students like me, and also I've got to thank them for that, because that was the first of a laptop I got. Is mum had hired laptops until that point. We didn't have a computer at home, and first year uni, straight off the bat, they give me a laptop. That's incentive to stay in. So, right? Like, having something like that.
If it wasn't for the Aboriginal centres at universities, I just don't think half the mob out there would have graduated. For me personally, it was a lifesaver.
Oh, absolutely.
It's called the Arala Centre up at University of New England in Armidale. And it's like you said, it was there. It was just stress relieving to come into that centre and sit there with other mob who were studying and struggling as well.
Yep.
And so you all sort of combine together and try and get through it together. Not everyone does, but...
Yeah.
It wasn't for that centres.
Oh, honestly, and that was a safe space, like almost leaving that bubble of university and then going and finding people who you can identify with. And that's really hard. Also, you know, when you do it in cities as well, and there's, you know, there's a different type of people, like non-Indigenous people, that it's quite confronting sometimes to be in these workplaces, that having a safe space where people understand you, that really helped me. And that... The people I met through there, like, you know, the people who mentored me through that, are honestly like some of my closest friends now, because we bonded over, we're in a weird place at uni. This is such an odd environment. so, yeah, it certainly hasn't been easy. It hasn't been straightforward. But, you know, I really put that down to, you know, my mum's strength and my grandparents' strength, right? Like, I've seen them just work hard. And here's the other thing, you don't have to be educated to be smart, because none of them were. They weren't educated, but they were brilliant.
I love that.
You know, and the same thing.
You don't have to be educated to be smart.
Oh, absolutely not. And same as, you don't need to be educated to be worth something, but in my case, I felt like I had to keep studying because I didn't want to have to continue to deal with the things that mum had dealt with or how people had spoken to her. And I saw that it was powerful in my sense for my family to get that education. And now, you know, I know there's so much pride for my family to name drop me and be like, she's doing this and she's doing that. And
your mum's got you all over Facebook. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah, but people treat you a different way. Not mob, but, you know, non-Indigenous folk treat you so differently when you can say, I have a piece of paper that has gave me such and such, you know? And they love it.
I do, yes.
So.
Yeah, but good for you, though. Like, I want to start talking about your, you're doing your PhD now at Griffith University.
Yes.
Researching the medicinal properties of Gumby Gumby. I'll try and say, is this Latin, the name for it? Pittosporum angustifolium?
Yes, it's pretty good, yes.
pretty good. Now, can you tell me about your research? Because I just find this fascinating. And as I said to you before, and I just want to be really transparent about this, means a lot to me, cancer research. I lost my best friend to lung cancer. He was a young father of five children. I think about him every day, you know. Mm. And we should still be hanging out, you know. We should be going to the Broncos this weekend. He's a Broncos fan. But I think about him every day, and I think about his kids, and I also think about so many other families out there, Aboriginal families, non-Indigenous families that this has happened to. But when we talk about finding cures within our own bush medicine and our own bush tucker, there's just something really culturally beautiful about that.
Yep.
That healing. You know, and I often say healing is the hardest thing we can ever do, but can you just tell me about this research?
Yep.
And how you came across it, and then, you know, what are you doing with it, and what have we found so far?
Yep, okay. So I think to give context kind of to understand what I'm actually doing, what my research is, I'll just jump back a step to my master's. So my master's was, it wasn't in bush medicine. So unfortunately, I wasn't allowed to research my own bush medicine for my master's. We're not going to get into that, but there is some politics around non-Indigenous people are, and, you know, it's hard for Indigenous people in this space, unfortunately, to thrive because a lot of non-Indigenous people do not want them there, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, how can you be an expert at something if you suddenly have Indigenous people calling you out for it, right? Yeah. So that's kind of...
This must be so frustrating. But anyway, we'll...
Yes, anyway, another day. But so I was working on Parkinson's disease.
Yep.
We're looking for a cure for Parkinson's disease, but I was in a team of Chinese researchers, so I was using their traditional medicine. So that actually gave me the skills to continue with what I'm doing now. So I was placed in, I guess, a drug discovery institute, and that was more pharmaceutically looking for, you know, cures and medicine. And I do want to just kind of be open and preface that just so people know that, you know, I had to do that training so I understood that world, right? Yeah. Like I had to be in that environment to understand.
Sort of big pharma environment, is it?
Well, it was like an institute that informed, you know, the pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
So it was like at the early stage of drug discovery and development, right? So basically you've just got, you know, a bunch of youngins working for very, very long hours a day, you know, trying to hit these targets, right? Trying to find the next big wonder drug. And so, you know, I completed my master's. Again, absolutely not easy. I was the only Indigenous person in my institute. I was the only female on that research team. It was extremely difficult for many reasons, but I had to get that degree in order to be here. I had to get that behind me, and I did. I got the Dean's Award for Research Excellence, the only person at that institute, which I will always brag about considering I was told that I was going to fail. Yeah.
The only sister in there, only black person there.
And I was the one who was looked down on, let me tell you. So, you know, I'm pretty proud of that. But I needed to do the things the Western way in order to really see what was wrong. Like I had to sit in that space to see how unsafe it was for mob and what was being done around our bush medicine, unfortunately. So I have removed myself from that environment. So everyone, you know, good for me, but also for good for the research. I really don't like to closely affiliate with what I'm doing now with any sort of institute or research center because of Indigenous knowledges and the sovereignty around that data. And that's something which Hallelujah. Is so important to me.
Yep.
So what I'm actually doing now is, like, yeah, I'm working on Gumby Gumby or Pittosporum angustifolium, and this has really come from my auntie's experience. So what has kind of happened over time as I've kind of spoken to people about my research that I was doing on the side, so this started back in 2017, and it took me till 2020 to actually be accepted by my uni to start doing it. So in that interim, though, I amazingly got to speak to so many people who was telling me about using the plant, was telling me about how it helped them for different conditions and the symptoms they were having, and, you know, their experiences using it with other medicine as well, other biomedicine. And that kind of has really inspired this project, is there's real people using this plant as well as other biomedicine who are desperate for answers, who are desperate to find something that works. And, you know, so my role in what I want to do with my research is to ensure that people have access, firstly, to this information, because a lot of research is being done on Gumby Gumby by non-Indigenous researchers at the moment in Australia and overseas, namely Germany. But it's gatekept behind these, you know, big scientific articles with very, you know, scientific language, and it's really made in a way so people can't understand it.
I think we had a similar issue happen with the Kakadu green plum.
Yeah.
And its healing properties, and other countries trying to steal its knowledges and whatnot.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
There was a big thing, and I think it was Redwoods, which is a beauty company, just mm-hmm. moisturised and what, actually stole the ingredients of the plant and used it. And the Mirau mob up in Kakadu actually sued them. This was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, good on them.
So they had to stop making it.
Amazing.
So, yeah, just, you know, like our plants and our medicines are getting looked at overseas, and that stops and blocks our mob from studying and using them and
absolutely.
Creating business and economy out of them.
Yeah, especially in Queensland. A lot of the Gumby Gumby research is currently coming out of Queensland. So the basis of my study so far is I've looked at who's doing what, and I kind of have my finger on the pulse of, like, I know every academic in the field, I know their suppliers.
Yep.
And so there's about 11 significant research papers who are working Gumby Gumby across predominantly four Queensland universities. None of these authors or scientists or researchers are Indigenous. In their papers, they're not acknowledging Indigenous knowledges, and not even by mob, not by elders, not by, you know, where they're working on. It's very Western, right? And even the plant suppliers of this research.
So annoying. It's frustrating.
No, it is.
You know, like,
it absolutely
is. And I'm
is.
Just listening to you. You're sort of leading the research around it. It just must be.
Oh, it's hard. It's really
hard. Sort of like the science is colonising our plants, you know? Like,
it absolutely. That's what it is. And it's really grueling to sit there and read day in and day out. Because.
But you have to.
You have to know what's out there, but a part of you dies when you read what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. And so even amongst these researchers, you've got predominantly three businesses where they're buying plants from. They're all non-Indigenous owned. And I've looked further into these because, you know, I know mob, you know, they're desperate to get their hands on these plants, especially when they're rarer species. And I know Gumby Gumby's got a little bit more of a rare abundance. Like,
yep.
It's widespread, but it's not as easy to find. And one of these suppliers.
And we're not going to tell people where to find it on this show.
Oh, no, right. But one of these suppliers, even, they, and this is just for me going down a Facebook wormhole and digging, their plants have actually been poisoned with pesticide by the state government up near Rocky Way. This is a non-Indigenous business. Yet they're selling it to people who, you know, have cancer and who need help, right? And so it's like, there's research coming out of not even these plants, which aren't good for humans to digest.
Gammon Gumby Gumby.
Exactly. There's just so much. There's so many layers to it. And one thing that really shifted my importance for the research, you know, looking at who is using it, was I read a study where Indigenous people who had cancer and were undergoing treatment in just in Queensland, 100% of those patients were also using some sort of bush medicine in addition to modern biomedicine. So there's absolutely that area of people wanting to use our medicine as well as, you know, the Western medicine. And that's kind of where my research really focuses, is making sure it's safe,
yep.
Making sure it's safe to use. So my auntie, for example, was telling me she was having all these symptoms, namely blood pressure, like she was passing out and stuff when she was having the gumby. And when you have bush medicine by yourself, we know it's safe, we know it's okay to use.
Yep.
But when you're adding these different pharmaceuticals and drugs, that's when it gets really complicated, right? And unfortunately, GPs aren't trained in bush medicine. So this is this area where it's a little bit of a gray area, and that safety is where I'm concerned with. And so I looked it up, and I looked at the lab's results that had already been done, that had been tested by other people, and they found that there was, when you put, so my auntie was drinking as a tea.
Yep.
And so one study was looking at the branches and the leaves' natural product composition, so like the pure things in it that make it work, right? So they looked at what was in it, and they found something called linolenic acids. There was a high concentration of these compounds when they were together with the leaf and stem, as if you were just brewing a tea. And when I looked at the activity of that, I actually found that it actually lowers your blood pressure. So if you were having, for example, if you have aspirin, if you have any other medication as well as the tea, you're going to experience a drop in blood pressure. That could be very dangerous. If you're a little bit older, you don't have family around, you could fall, hit your head, and you didn't expect it, right? So these kind of yarns I've had with people is what I want to focus my research on. And it didn't start off that way. My PhD didn't start off that way. I was adamant of going in the lab and doing 16 hours hard work as I've previously done. But then I saw how many non-Indigenous researchers are out there in the lab doing this stuff. And I saw that there was an area where I could slip into the middle of, is there's so many non-Indigenous researchers doing research on this plant, and they're in the lab and they're doing the grueling stuff, and they've got heaps of funding behind them as well. Keep in mind, I'm just one PhD student. I don't have, you know, the tens of thousands of dollars these guys have and all the experience. And so I looked at that and went, well, if these people are doing the hard work in the lab and they're publishing on it because that's how they're competing with each other, I can really sit here and interpret this and just have some yarns with community about how they're using it to help interpret the data, right? Yeah. Help interpret, you know, what the natural compounds are, and, oh, hey, this helped with my aches and pains. Why was that? Well, I can tell you what part is doing that. And so that's kind of where I sit in this research. Like, I sit between those two worlds. I'm just a little bit of a translator right now.
Conduit.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So that's really been my focus, because as we were yarning about earlier, science is so clinical.
Yeah.
It is so clinical. And of the research that has been done, let me tell you, a lot of it's not good science. Like, a lot of it is, I think any black fellow who reads it would just be like, this is so silly. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, there was and they spend tens of thousands of dollars on a study, right? Like, it's not
well, it's
a little
sort of
bit of money.
It's sort of create a product to sell, right?
Yeah. So you the know? Work that goes in these labs is a lot of money. They were looking at cancer properties of the gumby, but they wanted to know what liquid was best to get these components out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're sitting in a lab and they've got, you know, methanol and ethanol and all these bizarre kind of chemicals, man-made chemicals, and they're trying to find what can they get the most potent good stuff out of. So they spent years in the study to find out it was water. It was water. The same way it's traditionally used and made. Our ancestors didn't have these man-made chemicals.
No.
Of course it was water. We're telling you it's a bush medicine. Like, but they spent years on this and thousands of dollars. And this is the stuff I'm reading going, this is bizarre science. Like, it's odd. There's a lack of common sense happening here. So that's kind of, you know, where I go into the space, and it's frustration on one side. But also, you know, I really have to preface some of the stuff that they're writing. Not only is the science very biased, the language that's used is quite derogatory.
Yeah.
And of these journals that are being published, and it's happening like this year, last year, you know, 2019, the language that is being used is absolutely appalling. And it's not safe for mob to read this stuff. It absolutely is not safe.
That's why we're lucky you're there, I guess.
I guess.
Breaking it down and others, I mean.
Yeah, but it's not easy. Let me tell you, it's upsetting. I'll read something and I have to go have a walk and go sit in the sun because I'm like, that was distressing.
Well, hopefully you've got people you can bounce all this stuff off as well.
Oh, yeah. I rant about this. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because we've got to look after ourselves and, you know, self-care is really important. When you look ahead to your research, we're just going to wind up in the next five. we've had a great yarn. Where do you want to see your research go?
Yeah.
You know, you're still quite young. Obviously, hopefully you have a break from study soon, but obviously more research. And where do you want to see your study go? What do you want done with it for our mob?
Yeah. So I honestly, I think I would have gone to medicine, but I just wasn't good at exams, right? So I really want to be able to have my research do good stuff for people on the ground. I'd like for all the research that comes out of my work to be able, and I plan to disseminate my work or share it around to, you know, Aboriginal health centres.
Yep.
Share it with the GPs, be like, hey, you know, there's certain drugs that could be causing reactions if you use bush medicine with it. And that's...
This is just amazing.
Yeah, you know.
I love it. See, it's like, you know, walk into the Woolloongabba ATSICs and...
Absolutely.
Hey, doc, just, you know.
Yeah, this is a medication. Like, for example, and I can say it here just because we've got a little bit of time, like there's a medication, an antibiotic called tetracycline. I'm not sure what the Australian pharmaceutical name is, so anyone look it up. But if you take that with bush medicine, there is a negative effect. It either won't make your medication work as well or it could have negative symptoms.
Yep.
So stuff like that, you just got to be careful.
It's really important because more and more of our mob are turning back to bush medicines.
Especially,
you know, I recently did a few months ago, Bowie bought me stuff from my cousin from out at Boomai, all the Yoruba leaf and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's great to know this sort of stuff because if we are taking a white tablet for blood pressure or something like that.
Yeah, what's in it, right? Like,
yeah, and we do take some bush medicine, then that catalyst, that reaction could be negative for us.
Exactly. So that on that front, I really want to make sure I'm bringing it back to community and I'd love to get, you know, community involved and yarn with people about their uses and, you know, to help people to understand where people are using this.
Yep.
But also because unfortunately I've been in this Western academic space, I see how brutal it is for mob and I really want my work to go towards policy change. I want it to be safer for mob to research this and I want, you know, our elders and our old people to have complete sovereignty over what's happening with the research because there's too much being done, but if you don't know, you don't know, right? And it's hidden well. Until you get in there and that's all you see. So, you know, I hope my experience and talking out about that can actually make a difference.
Well, I think it is and I think it will. I think it's completely fascinating and I hope you keep coming back in and chatting to us about your work and
the research.
And I just one more question before I go because I just think this is really important and I actually went and got some advice from my sister Rhea upstairs there. But, you know, it's really important for women in this space, black women.
Yes.
And your comment before that you went through, you're the only sister in this class, only female, only black woman, in such a male-dominated industry.
Yeah.
How did you break down? How did you sidestep these gooses, so to speak? And, you know, for young sisters out there, what's your advice for them getting into such a male-dominated world? Because you really have broke down barriers and you're doing such incredible work for our mob on country. It's just beautiful, sis. And so respect to you, but, yeah, just if you could just share that last question for us, your answer to that, and then we'll wrap him up.
Yeah, I think the best advice, and I think this goes for, you know, women who want to get in this environment or other young people, is understanding that your differences are really special, right? Like they may not be appreciated in Western society, but I can tell you when you're in a board meeting and people are throwing back, you know, around ideas of how you can do this and this and this, if everyone else in that room's a cookie cutter, they're coming out with cookie cutter answers and they're not getting to the bottom of it, right? Mm. There is such a strength in being different. There is such a strength in being, you know, an Indigenous person, the resilience that comes from that. Like, you could take away, you know, all my degrees, you know, any of my accomplishments, and I still would know that I'm the hardest working person in that boardroom. And I think that goes for all mob. You don't need to have these great qualifications or what else to be important or to matter or to have brilliant ideas. And I think identifying with your own strengths and really using that to get where you want to go, not where someone tells you to go.
Yeah, well, that's great advice. Eden Little, Australia's first Indigenous medicinal chemist, is that right? A
yes.
Natural product?
Yeah, yeah.
Such a mad
There's
title.
There's so many names.
Oh,
yeah.
No. I love meeting the first of the first, but thanks for coming in and sharing your research and your story. I think it's been quite empowering for our younger folk out there. We know how challenging universities can be, but with young sisters and brothers in there like yourself studying our own sort of medicines and our healing properties, it's just, you know, the future's bright.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks just for coming in. We appreciate it. Here on AAA Murray Country. For now, kick back and enjoy some tunes.